behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. You know, I got an email recently. It said, "Hey Chris, we'd love to send you a couple of our beers to try." And I was like, "Hell yeah, that'd be great." And then I realised that while I knew the name Exit Brewing, I couldn't remember having ever tried any of their beers, let alone knowing much about them. So I did a bit of digging and found out that these guys have a pretty interesting backstory and a couple of ripping nicknames. So I decided to ask the co-founder of Exit Brewing, Grum Knight, one of those blokes with an excellent nickname, to tell us how Exit Brewing came to be. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Grum Knight.
Ah, cheers, Chris. Great to be here.
It's great to have you, mate. We're having a few technical issues today, which is probably, par for the course with this every now and then, and quite funny, really, seems that you were someone who used to work in the IT industry.
Well, that's it, isn't it? And glad to be out of it. It's a frustrating thing to deal with when things don't work. So.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of that, mate, as someone who still works in the IT industry, I've got to say, I love how you came up with the brewery name.
Yeah, that was, we came up with the idea of brewing a long time ago, and then thought, oh, we need a name. So it was, I was sitting on a toilet and doing some thinking, as you do, and it just popped into my head. It's like, oh, XIT. Yeah, that'd work. We could be Exit. And from that, I sort of immediately thought of the man, and Fraser didn't love it till I explained it a bit more, but... And he goes, oh, yeah, that works.
And so you traded in the ones and the zeros for hops and malt.
That's the one, yeah.
See what I did there? That's brilliant, I reckon. But let's take it way back. When did you guys get hooked on brewing?
We didn't really get hooked on brewing. I actually started brewing with the idea I'd start a brewery.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, you're straight from the offset. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was working in IT for nearly 20 years and was sick of the job. And spent a long time thinking about what I could do that would be not IT, and not something I got sick of quickly and just ended up being a job that I also hated and just got paid less. So looking at hobbies and passions and beer was one of those things. Fraser and I were living in the UK and doing a lot of beer tourism through Belgium and Europe and a bit to America. So, yeah, one of the passions being beer was, we were amazed by the flavours and styles and things, especially the Belgians were coming up with or had for a long time. Started playing around with brewing, brewed a couple of goo beers just to get the head around the fermentation and the sanitation, and then went straight into all grain.
Yeah, so you guys sort of met in about 2000, you and Fraser, and you talked about your beer journeys through the UK, Europe, the USA. Were you guys doing that together, or was it more of a case of, we're going to go off and do our own thing, if you love someone, set them free, and if they come back to you, start a brewery kind of thing?
A little bit. We did meet in 2000, then we did were separated, so to speak, for 5 or 6 years, and then I ended up being over in Ireland meeting my brother and caught up with Fraser, and he ended up saying they may have worked there, and so I ended up getting a job alongside Fraser again.
Still in the IT industry then?
Yeah, yep. So, yep. Worked with Fraser and then, travelled a lot with him on these beer journey trips.
And as you said, getting across into Belgium was kind of something you guys were pretty keen on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an easy trip. We were living in Surrey, so we could jump on a train and be in Belgium in a couple of hours.
Oh, how nice is that?
We did day trips. We would get up early and jump on the train and have breakfast and go to Delirium Cafe.
Oh, you bastard.
Just to start the day till other things opened.
Oh, jeez. You would be making so many people feel jealous right now. I speak to a lot of people about, going on beer holidays and all that sort of thing, and, so often the trips to Belgium are at the absolute top of their, greatest holiday lists.
Yeah, it's an amazing beer culture over there. Some of the beer festivals are also amazing. It's nice that you turn up in a city square and you get to use the proper glassware and sit outside on cobblestones, and you're sort of trusted to do that kind of thing, which is completely different in Australia, where it's like if you're lucky you get Perspex cups and you get police dog. Mind you, there very rarely was any trouble or any overly drunk people, which is amazingly well controlled.
Yeah.
Seeing as we worked out everything, anything under an 8% beer at these things is considered a light beer.
That's awesome. Oh, I've got to get over there one day. I'm going to have to try and work out a way to hijack a family trip and head over there and get into that beer culture, because it sounds absolutely awesome.
Yeah, and especially this was quite a few years ago, so a lot of the festivals were just quiet. It has got busy. Well, even the years we were doing it, it got noticeably busier. So you had to sort of plan your days a bit better. But yeah, probably in the 2007, 2008, 2009 time frame, you could turn up at these things and there'd be very few people there, and you could walk around and just grab whatever you wanted.
Happy days, happy days. And then fast forward a bit, you guys have done. You've got that all out of your systems. You sowed your wild brewing oats over there in Europe. And then you guys get back here, and how did the conversation go between the two of you about starting this brewery?
We had spoken about it when we were both still over there, and the plan was pretty much when we move back, we'll start a brewery. So, again, Fraser went off. He's lived in Brussels for nearly 6 months to break up his trip back, and I went across the island where my wife's from. I lived over there. And then, yeah, once we both got back, it was sort of a case of starting the process of working out how to start a brewery.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Okay, so then you started to get the plans together. What were you sort of thinking? Were you thinking we'll start as gypsies, we'll start our own full thing, we might do a brew pub? What were you sort of discussing?
At the time, we didn't really understand gypsying, so we were pretty much just planning on building our own small brewery and getting some of the beers that I was making out and having them tried. And we had a friend's place in Seaford. We're trying to get licensed. And while we were doing that, we worked out how difficult it is to deal with some councils sometimes.
Well, I've heard that once or twice.
Yep. And Air Fraser was in at Slow Beer and chatting to someone in there who mentioned that Cavalier were doing selling a fermenter and then renting the rest of the brewery out if you wanted to use it, which allowed me to actually physically do the brewing, which is very rare for that gypsy brewing model.
Well, they were just letting you go for it all on your own.
Well, you kind of had to go and brew with them a few times.
Yep.
They sort of made sure you knew what you're doing. But once you got through that, yeah, pretty much they gave you a key and you could you got a day booked in, and it's like your day to brew. So you had access to all the brew house and brewed a beer and put it in tank. And
happy days, happy days. And so what was the sort of the scene like around the Cavalier Brewery at that time? Were there were other like-minded brewers, you know, you could, you know, shoot the shit with and, you know, check each other's ideas and recipes, and or was it just sort of like doing your own thing?
No, it was very much you could chat to all the other guys, and there was a whole bunch of really good brewers and breweries there. So that's where I met the Kaiju guys.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They were there when we got there. Hendo from Brew Cult was there.
Oh.
Sean from Killer Sprocket.
Yep.
Bit later on, Bad Shepherd and Wolf of the Willows turned up.
It's the who's who of the scene.
Yeah, all brewing out of the one brew house. And, yeah, there was plenty of knowledge and great people to talk to. And, yeah, it was a great way to do it.
Yeah, nice stuff, nice stuff. And who would have thought that a couple of IT nerds back in those early days would have you know, come up with that very creative idea of using batch numbers to avoid having to get creative and actually name their beers.
Yeah, that's probably makes sense. And, and in hindsight, probably something we should have spent more time on ideas and names and marketing and less times on developing beer. But I guess the passion was for the beer, and that's how it sort of come through.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. And you mentioned the guys from Kaiju, who obviously produce some awesome beers themselves. So you're brewing with them there, and then at some stage, they said, we're going to start our own thing. You guys want to be involved? Was it as simple as that?
Pretty much, yeah. So I think they were producing – they had two tanks at Cavalier and needed more space. So they've kind of pulled the pin and gone, well, we need to do something else. We need to increase capacity. So they started looking around at a place to build their own brewery. And I guess partly because of the the model of having multiple breweries in the same place and being able to share the equipment and the cost, they thought that is a good model in general. So they came to us and said, do you want to come out with us? And yeah, we jumped at the idea. It's like, brilliant. We'd love to work with you guys some more.
And so is that effectively what it is? You guys just sort of like go halvesies in the brewery, and so you've got one system to brew the beers, and then you sort of manage two schedules, and you've both got your own sets of tanks in the one location. Is that how it sort of works?
It's not even our own sets of tanks. It's just
got tanks.
Yeah, whoever needs beer out, and yeah, Kaiju are a far bigger proportion of it now. They've grown a lot quicker than us, so yeah, it's not halvesies. It's a percentage of what we make, but
that has to be difficult sometimes. Yeah,
It never really has been a huge problem. I'll go to Nat and say, look, we need this. And it's like that. He'll say, well, okay, we need this. And we sort of look at who's run out first, or who's got the most demand, or who needs it most. And it's like, well, you can have this day and you'll have this day. And it's like, yep, that works. And it's always been worked out amicably. So
yeah, cool. So is it more a matter of hours in the day or tank capacity that sort of dictates how things work in there?
It can be either, depending on how badly organised we are. If we're well organised, it's tank space. If for some reason, well, it's organised, or you get an unexpected large order or something like that, it's like, well, our stock levels have just gone through the floor. It's like, right, we need this beer ASAP. So, yeah, we'll just turn around, and yeah, usually shuffling something's not a huge issue.
No, it's good. It's a great way to do things, just another different model in the brewing industry. Like, if for others getting into this, would you suggest it as being a good idea, or do you think that maybe travelling a different route, you know, through the Gypsy or through a brew pub or whatever might be better?
At the moment, if I was starting out, I would probably go down the brew pub idea.
Yep.
I think just because there is so many breweries and so much competition, it's very hard to just start out a commercial brewery. And I found, especially in the last couple of years, feedback from reps is, there's so many reps walking into every bottle shop trying to sell them beer that it's very competitive. So, but at least if you've got a brew pub, you can hone your skills and make beers and get immediate feedback and have somewhere to push it straight to retail.
Yeah, like, and obviously that's, how do you pronounce the name of your, it's not a brew pub, it's a pub, isn't it? How do you pronounce it?
We just call it Outgang.
Outgang.
But it's Flemish.
Yep.
So it's more got that Hothgang.
I'll go with Outgang.
If you want.
So do you have plans at some stage to change that into a brew pub, or is it just going to be a pub?
We have spoken about it. It's too small to be much of a brew pub.
Right.
But we have got a 60-litre system that we got when we were in the UK. And now that's sitting at the back of Dandenong, not being used. So we have spoken about the idea of taking that down there and doing a couple of small batches in there, and at least having some beer made on site. The issue with that is the amount of licensing and
Of course.
Admin and council approvals.
Friggin'
you need to
rules.
Do it.
Jeez.
Yeah, it'd be nice, but
no, I mean, it would give you that, as you say, the immediate feedback, but yeah, if you've got to jump through too many hoops to do it, it sort of maybe might be a bit too hard.
Yeah, well, I can still brew the beer at Dandenong and just take it across
to
Richmond, but I think people like to go there and have a brew house and something to look at and maybe experience the brewing process occasionally.
Well, so when you talk to people about your brewery, do you refer to yourself as I don't know, is it a gypsy or is it contract, or you're a brewery owner, or you're in a brewery marriage or something like that?
We just usually go with brewery owner.
Brewery owner, yep.
You could call it a marriage, I guess, although we don't fight as much as being married. So
when you sort of came up with this idea to share the brewery space and all that sort of thing, and you're making those decisions, what was the driver behind it all? Was it maybe, you know, a financial thing that it was, you know, halving the cost, or was it maybe a risk mitigation around, you know, just dipping your toe into the water to work out whether this was going to be a career moving forward? What was going through your head?
I think the Cavalier worked brilliantly in that it was one tank. It was a very cheap way to do it, and that was very much about just dipping our toe in. With the Kaiju break up, it was about basically being able to afford better equipment. If you share the cost, you can tip your money in and go, right, we can have a better brew house and a better bottling line at the time.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Which is now a canning line. And it's better than we could afford all by ourselves. So, yeah, it works really well.
That's good. Now, you guys obviously work really well together, but what about the rest of the Melbourne craft beer scene? I mean, it's hot right now. What's the vibe like around town? Is it super competitive, or is it like a community of sharing and collaboration, or is it the little guys working together to take on the mega breweries, or do you just sort of all do your own thing?
I think it is still very much a culture where people enjoy having a beer together. So, you know, you share a passion and a dream. There's definitely competition out there because there's only so many retail spaces, but I guess, you know, you turn up to a festival and you have a chat to everyone around and yeah, you get on really well with most of them and enjoy having a beer with them and talking about the issues and problems that we all share.
And I think also sort of around the Melbourne scene, not everybody, but, you know, a good majority maybe of the breweries in Victoria now are starting to do their own venue thing. So it takes away from a bit of that, you know, that super competitive, I'm trying to get that one tap at, you know, Beer Deluxe or whatever, or, you know, that everybody's competing with, where you've got your own backyard where you can serve your own beers or your mate's beers, like in the case with you guys and Kaiju. And therefore, you don't have to be, you know, going at each other the whole time.
Yeah, that's true. Often other brew pubs will serve our beers, which is great. But although there's a lot more breweries, there are also a lot more bars that are serving a better range of beers. A lot of places are pulling out of contracts or getting to the end of a major's contract on their taps and looking to have more freedom to serve what beers they want and hopefully what beers the people want. So,
and hopefully serving great beers such as yours, which is a great segue because these days for you it's all about the AIBA medals and I'm assuming things are going great. I mean, my favourite was your gold for the Session Extra Pale Ale. That is a ripping beer, very close to my heart, one of the ones that you sent me to try, being that I'm a lover of the mid-strength. Is it true that that beer actually just started out as one you made for your mates just to try?
Kind of. I had done a mid strength earlier, and it is quite tricky to get it, get the body right on it because of the lower alcohol level. You're limited by the malt usage. And I'd played around with it, and look, it's seen in the market that, that there is a lot of mid strength drunk in Australia, although a lot of it is your 4X gold and Great Northern style, but and it was also me as well. I'll tend to have a couple of lower alcohol beers rather than going straight for the 7% IPAs now.
I'm hearing you.
Yeah, so I think it just felt like the market was there for it, and I'd played around with the recipe a fair bit, and I had a mate who was having a 40th birthday, and so I brewed a small batch of that and made sure he had some, and he appreciated that. So, being able to drink beer all night and not fall
over—it's perfect. I still feel like we're gonna get that bit of a revolution in the market, like we saw with the 4X Gold in the mainstream market. Maybe it's an age thing. Maybe there's younger drinkers in the craft beer market right now who will get to, I'll say, our age in our 40s. Where you really need to start thinking about your health and you can't always really get on it because you've got kids or responsibilities or whatever. Maybe that wave might come in a few years where it'll really start to kick along. And I mean, with the beer like the SXPA that you've got, you'll be well placed to be capitalised on that, I reckon.
Hopefully, yeah. So yeah, that was done as a limited release, but we are going to brew it again this year and basically rebrand it as the Session Ale.
Yep.
And yeah, we're going through a remarketing or a rebranding at the moment, so that'll probably be one of the first to come out with the new looking tins.
Okay, so what is the new look that you're going with? Like, because I've seen the black tins and I've seen silver tins from you guys.
It's going to be different again. So we've got the current coloured ones, which we get quite a bit of feedback that people don't love them.
Really?
We had a few people saying they do, but far too many saying they don't like it, probably not picking them up off the shelf, which is what's hurting.
I mean, that's tough feedback to get, but if that's what they're telling you,
we're still going through the process, so we're bouncing it around. We released the Apricot Sour, end of last year.
That was a ripping beer.
Yeah,
I love that beer.
I really enjoyed that as well. I thought the Stone Fruit would go well with the with the sour, which I kind of knew that it worked because Cantillon do Fafoon And that's probably my favourite Canton beer. So
was the label on that beer sort of a nod to what might be coming through? Because that was a, you know, brightly coloured, was it pinky orange sort of colour?
It was an apricot colour.
Of course it fucking was, sorry.
That was designed with the Slow Beer guy, so Chris and Isabel from Slow Beer came to us and said, look, we want to do some collabs and we want to get into design. And so they came up with that and we loved it. But going forward for core range, we probably need to simplify it a little bit, but that was probably the direction we're looking at.
Yeah, okay. Oh, good stuff. And what about the actual whole thing with, you know, with product development at Exit? Is it all about, I've got a party to make a beer for and then something comes born from that? Or is it more planned out with you guys where you think we've got a hole in our product range, or how's it all go?
Probably not as formal as any of that. It's often...
I have a dream.
Yeah, I like a beer. I like this beer. I like this. I want this flavour.
Fair enough.
So yeah, this SXBA was done as there probably is a market for a mid strength, and played around with the recipe until I was happy with it, and then scaling it always changes things as well. It's not until it actually comes out that you really have 100% definition of what the flavour profile is going to be. So it's nice when it hits the nail exactly how you want it hit. So, but then we'll sit down and have a chat about what I want to brew and what other people think there is a place for in the market. And then I'll go back and have a play around with the ideas that come out of that and brew a beer based on that.
And you mentioned the apricot sour was a collaboration with Slow Beer. Are you a fan of doing these collaborations? You also did one, about 12 months ago with Rocky Ridge. Are there plans for more of these in the future, perhaps?
They can be fun, and it's a good way to go out and do something a little bit different, a little bit more adventurous. We actually did two with Rocky Ridge. They were actually out in a Good Beer Week, so September, I guess.
Right,
And they came past the brewery, and we brewed the brekkie juice then.
Yep.
And then I went over to WA October, November, and went down to Bisselden and checked out their brewery, and we brewed the Funky Pale,
cool.
Which only just came out just before Christmas. So, two interesting beers. One, the brekkie juice with a whole bunch of actual juice in it. So you've got the passion fruit, guava, mango, and pineapple.
Nice combinations.
Yeah. So just like a brekkie juice, only beery.
Nice.
And the Funky Pale used a Sac Troy yeast, which throws some very interesting pineapple character from the esters, which goes well with a nice hoppy pale. So, yeah, that came out really well as well, brewed over there.
So, you know, a lot of people are doing collaborations. Are they worth the effort? Are they a lot of work? And do you do them to, you know, have a bit of fun, or is it more about trying to get your name, you know, in with another brewer or to learn something? What's it all about?
It can be all those things. It is. It's always interesting going and spending a day at someone else's brewery and seeing how they do things and say, well, that's interesting, and maybe picking something up. Even if you don't take it on particularly, it's like, well, it's just another aspect of things. There's so many ways to do so many things, and there's no definitive right and wrong in many ways. It's just it changes things slightly. It can be a different aspect. So people, you can use it a little bit for marketing maybe, that it's sort of if people have heard of the other brewery and not so much you, or the other way around. That can help. It can also be fun. Like it's usually as a guest brewer, you go in, have a few drinks and let them do the work. When you're actually brewing yourself, when you brew it yourself, you tend to be more involved and responsible for what goes on in a day. So, more work and less play.
Yep. So, what was it with Rocky Ridge? You trying to jump on their coattails because they're kind of like the cool kid at the moment?
I think they were launching it into the East Coast.
I'm just taking the piss, mate.
We were basically launching to the West Coast. So we got a bit on both sides from that one, I hope.
Beautiful. Yeah, I've chatted to Hamish on this in the past. It's a bloody ripping setup that he's got going over there. I love it. Absolutely love what he's doing.
Yeah, it's good fun. So all on a farm and very very rustic with the way they've brought all the stuff together, yeah. but brilliant in a lot of ways. So, and they do a great job out of it.
And pretty much saved the family farm by, you know, almost repurposing it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very cool, very cool. So what about the coming year? I mean, you talked about doing a bit of a rebranding. What else is going on? Is it a year of maybe, you know, consolidation, experimentation, growth, revolution, evolution? What are you going to call it?
That's a good question. 2020, I guess we need to push growth. So the marketing and rebranding is a big focus for us at the moment. Something that we've been all about the beer and very, very little about running a business, which we're learning doesn't really work that well.
Yeah. It is a tough game, isn't it? Because being a small business owner is you got to be a jack of all trades.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I said earlier, I have probably focused too much on the beer, the design, the quality and all that kind of stuff for the beer, which absolutely has to be done, but not enough on possibly the marketing. And we've just cobbled together all any kind of branding or packaging or look that we've had. So this is the first time we've sort of sat down and gone, right, what do we need to do to appeal to the market so as we can get the beers we think are great out for people to try.
I mean, to me, it's an evolutionary process for you. It just sounds like you've recognised the fact that, yep, you're producing great beer, but sometimes great beer is just not enough. And then even though you have every great intention of being a jack of all trades, every now and then you've got to take a step back and say, oh, I'm not as good at this. I need to have a bit of a team around me, whether that be internally or bring in external consultants and address some of those issues. And obviously for you, you've recognised that branding is going to be a big part of you taking that next step. I'll take my hat off to you, mate, because sometimes it's not that easy to do when you've been so close to a brand that you've given birth to.
Yeah, it is. It's sitting back and looking outside again. It's trying to look at the forest and just seeing the trees. So, it's... The big picture is often lost from the middle of the forest. So, it sort of took some people to talk me around into what it needs to be. So,
You got a bit of a tap on the shoulder, did you?
Oh, just discussions. And then I don't know anything about branding and marketing. It's not the way my brain works.
You're an IT guy.
Yeah, I sit there and I analyze stuff and go, here's what I need and here's why I'll buy it. And the packaging comes very little into it, but I keep hearing that the packaging has a big impact on a lot of people, so that's what it has to be.
Yeah, no, fair enough, mate. It's great that you've recognised it and you're going to do something about it. I reckon that means you're in for a pretty bloody big year, I'd say.
Well, we're hoping so. And we've worked out that AOBA trophies don't pay the bills, so they're no, nice they to don't. Have, but they are. At the end of the day.
Nice shiny doorstops.
Yeah, there you go.
So, what do you think is going to be keeping you up at night for the next 12 months then as you move on with the brewery?
Apart from the kids and the new puppy I've got.
Business-wise, I mean.
All right, yes. The marketing and branding does concern me because I just don't understand it. So I'm kind of just putting my faith in other people and hoping that what they bring to me and – you know, whether I like it or not, it's irrelevant really as far as I can tell because I don't really know. So it's kind of just trusting the person that their experience is right and we pick the right people and, we go down a path that is going to get people to try the beer.
You've got a solid base to work off of with some great beers. Thanks for sending me those samples just recently. They were absolutely awesome. I wish you the best for the next 12 months and the future because I think you guys have got a great little setup there. I love what you're doing in conjunction with Kaiju. I think that's fantastic. Again, another fantastic brewery out of Victoria. The scene in Victoria is pretty cool right now. So, mate, I wish you all the best.
Awesome work, Chris. Thanks very much, mate. And I'm sure I'll see you around at a festival or an event soon.
I'll do my best to get over there for Good Beer Week, I think, mate. And I've got to say thank you so much for – this is our third attempt at doing this today. We had some technical issues with the software that I used to record, and thanks for your patience. It hasn't been easy, but finally now it's 9 o'clock at night. We've been able to finish this thing off. So thanks, mate. Cheers to great beers.
Awesome work, mate. Cheers, buddy.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?